time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Well, the much-anticipated Supreme Court ruling finally came out. President Trump, like all presidents, does have absolute immunity from prosecution for official acts during his presidency, but not personal acts. Now, the personal act clause is something the left either cannot hear or will not hear, probably the latter. It was a 6-3 majority decision. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote, "The president is not above the law." And he says that not everything the president does is official. Like everyone else, the president is subject to prosecution in his unofficial capacity. But unlike anyone else, the president is a branch of government, and the Constitution vests in him sweeping powers and duties. Roberts continues, "Accounting for that reality and ensuring that the president may exercise those powers forcefully as the framers anticipated he would does not place him above the law. It preserves the basic structure of the Constitution from which the law derives." And then Roberts also said, "Congress may not criminalize the president's conduct in carrying out the responsibilities of the executive branch under the Constitution." This was split along conservative-liberal lines, the 6 conservative justices against the 3 liberal justices. However, conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett, a Trump appointee, she concurred with Roberts only in part. She suggested that Trump could still be charged with crimes related to the allegation that some key battleground states were stolen a few years ago. She writes, "The indictment alleges that the president asked the Arizona House Speaker to call the legislature into session to hold a hearing about election fraud claims. The president has no authority over state legislatures or their leadership, so it is hard to see how prosecuting him for crimes committed when dealing with the Arizona House Speaker would unconstitutionally intrude on executive power." Now, I completely disagree with Barrett on that. If a state election is part of a federal election for president, absolutely the president has a right to make a request. However, my main point in bringing that up right now is that Barrett was not in complete agreement with the other conservatives. That is significant. Look, this is a sensible ruling, and if they were talking about anybody other than President Trump, they would view it as a sensible ruling. If it was the Biden administration that was being prosecuted and they had appealed to the Supreme Court, every single person on the left would be saying the exact opposite. They would be hailing the court for affirming the time-honored constitutional rights of the presidency and protections of the presidency. The president's powers are stated in the Constitution, and he must be free to exercise those powers. He must be free to make decisions rather than being wishy-washy and equivocating, rather than being blown back and forth like the wind, like a double-minded man. Bad enough when they pay too much attention to their advisors and focus groups out of fear of not getting reelected, but to also have to look over their shoulders because the next administration might come along and try to criminalize acts that they did while they were president. We cannot tie a president's hands like that, especially when he's commander-in-chief Chief of our military and leader of the free world. What part of that are we not understanding? Right after this ruling, Joe Biden, fresh from his stellar performance in the debate, stood in front of a teleprompter and said that our Constitution does not give the president the right to be king. And he warned that the president is not above the rule of law. This from the man who ignored the Supreme Court ruling on forgiving loans for college students and who weaponized his Justice Department to go after his current political rival. He's giving us lectures on not being above the rule of law. It would be laughable if it weren't so tragic. Actually, President Biden should be happy. Look at the stuff he's done that could be called into question. Illegal immigrants raping and murdering women. The guy has blood on his hands. And you can't even argue that that was an official act as president, since protecting our borders is part of the responsibility of president. He's violating his oath as president. That's something that actually shouldn't be protected. But a lot of people might claim that it would. And then there was an official act that he would be protected under, according to this, that he should be doubly grateful that he's being protected for, the withdrawal from Afghanistan. It was done in a botched up way. 13 of our servicemen were killed, but that one you can argue was an official act as president, because a president does have a right to withdraw our troops. All to say Joe Biden should be personally happy about this ruling. And again, if he had been the subject in the case rather than Donald Trump, all the liberals would be hailing this decision. Who are we kidding? I want to read a couple of portions from the dissent. Justice Sotomayor wrote it. She says, among other things, this gives the president the right to order the Navy SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival. Immune, she says. Organizes a military coup to hold on to power. Immune. Takes a bribe in exchange for a pardon. Immune, immune, immune. No, it is not part of the duties of the president to take bribes. Where is she getting this stuff from? As for concern about assassinating, you mean like when Obama gave orders to assassinate an American citizen? I didn't hear anybody complaining when that happened. But she's talking about things that the president does not have a right to do. It's what he does legally that can't be second-guessed. Justice Jackson wrote a separate dissent. She says, and I quote, this breaks new and dangerous ground by discarding the nation's long-held principle that no one is above the law. Justice wrote those very words in the majority. He's not above the law. Any personal thing he does that's criminal is not above the law. Any criminal thing he does as president that isn't really within the powers of the president in our Constitution is not above the law. Now, I expect Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden and the pundits at MSNBC to make idiotic comments like that, and oh, they did. But you would think that a Supreme Court justice, even a liberal one, would be a little more responsible. They know what the majority opinion said and what the majority opinion didn't say. Whenever Democrats like a ruling from the Supreme Court, such as back when Proposition 8 about marriage was overturned, thus legalizing gay marriage, or back in the 70s when the Roe versus Wade decision came out, well, then it's the rule of law. It's a time-honored, important constitutional obligation to go along with our Supreme Court. But when there's a ruling they don't like, they threaten to pack the courts. They threaten to pass new laws which give them oversight of the court's opinions. They act like whiny, sniveling, snot-nosed brats. They do not deserve to be running our country. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Good afternoon, Bob. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing okay, too. So, breaking news, everyone. Marianne Williamson has just decided to go back into the presidency run after that whole Biden debate situation.
Oh, really?
Zero chance she's going to get in at all. Zero. Did you see how bad her results were in New Hampshire and South Carolina? I mean,
yeah, I'm actually remembering very little, practically nothing about her. That's the impression she made on me.
I swear to you, Fox News yesterday, I was watching it early in the morning, and they were making the biggest deal about this thing. I'm like, are we kidding? I mean, it would be an easy win for Trump if they decided.
You know what I find interesting about this whole thing, though, Brendan? And we talked about this last week, how everybody at the same time suddenly turned on Biden, whereas 2 days before, they were all telling us that you can't trust any of these videos. Someone gave him the green light. And what's interesting is they're scrambling because they want to put pressure on him to step down from running. Right. They're not putting pressure on him to cease being president immediately. Well, if he's really that much of a danger because he's losing his mental capacities, then he shouldn't be president at all anymore. They're not concerned about that, though. They're just concerned about losing their power in the next election. What hypocrisy.
I think also their mindset of, oh, we just have 4 more months with this guy. That's not the point.
Four more months could be a lifetime to Putin and China.
I'm telling you, yeah. One last thing I wanted to say before we get into our main topic.
Sure.
There is a gospel group that I absolutely love. I think they're a fantastic musical group. They're called The War Entreaty. It's a husband and wife duo. They were nominated for Best New Artist last year at the Grammys. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, they're in the news, and I have to say, I think it's...
What, did somebody ask them about same-sex marriage
I think it's an overreaction on their part slightly.
Oh, okay.
So, they were at a music festival called the Coca-Cola Sips and Sounds Music Festival. And inside their dressing room, they saw that there was a cotton plant on their dresser, on the nightstand dresser table of theirs that they had there. And they were offended, calling it a racist remark. And I don't know. When you look, they actually showed the picture of it.
You mean it was a plant of actual cotton that people grow?
Yes, exactly.
And they're making that racist because so many slaves picked cotton?
Exactly. Yeah, but here's the thing.
Doesn't mean cotton doesn't exist.
And my other thing, too.
Going to make it wrong to eat cotton candy next?
I was going to say, it's part of a bouquet. They showed a picture of it, and it's a bouquet, and the cotton, yes, it's there, but it's like one strand of it. And on top of that, it's supposed to add...
The boy who cried wolf. If you call everything racist, then the real racists are camouflaged. Yeah. That's the problem with all this.
It reminds me of a situation a couple years ago in NASCAR. Bubba Wallace was calling out NASCAR officials over to his garage because there was a noose that was tied around his garage door rope. Come to figure out,
I remember that. Yeah. It was just the rope to pull the garage down is all it turned out to be.
Yeah, and it turned out also it's been there since October 2019. And more importantly, there was 11 other racers who said that's the exact same tying style that I have in my garage door as well. So to me, it sounded like a big overreaction.
Knee-jerk overreactions.
Yeah. So, and it's a shame to see that. And especially from people that are like, I was okay with Bubba Wallace prior to this. And ever since then, he's been a whiny, complaining person. And Dave Stahl has been on my side on this too, because we have a racing show prior to your show on the air. And we on...
Racing is one of the 50 shows Dave Stahl has.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we both kind of agree. Bubba Wallace is kind of a whiny, complaining little guy who, whenever he doesn't get his way, he'll use the race card pretty quickly. And it's just not fair to the sport as it is, because it already has a pretty negative limelight on a lot of things. Again, it stinks that one of my favorite gospel groups, it has to go down this route too. It's the way celebrities are these days. I like Robert De Niro's movies, but when you look at his political viewpoints, they are just extreme to the max.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he'll go down in history being remembered for that. He should have just kept his mouth shut.
Yeah, Barbara Streisand's another good one. I know you love the music.
I am a huge fan of her talent, but she's just the worst when she opens her mouth about other things. Just sing, Babs. Just sing.
That's it. All right. So let's get into our main topic today. So as of late, I have been watching a lot of Christian apologist YouTube channels, and they have some quite interesting videos that they like to respond to. Even on campus, I'll see that they'll have some college students. I'll go up and ask them questions. So I hear their questions, but inside my head, I'm always thinking, how would Bob respond to these questions?
How would one apologist respond to another apologist?
Exactly. So I'm going to play you the clips that they played in the video themselves, and I would like to hear your response. And I already heard their response.
So we're hearing the videos of people trashing Christianity, exactly. And then the apologist's response, and then you want to hear my response?
No.
We're just going to hear my response.
Yes, we're just going to hear your response. And I can tell you, if you want me to paraphrase, I could paraphrase if you want. But
I can't be like a politician, go, gee, how are the other apologists?
Exactly.
Are the polls and focus groups saying?
All right, okay. So here is our first clip. This has to do with the word homosexuality inside the Bible. So let's take a listen to this clip.
The word homosexual does not appear in the original manuscript of the Bible once, not in Greek, not in Hebrew, not in Aramaic. In fact, there is only one word in the Bible that has been mistranslated in English into homosexual, and that word is arsenokoitai. And that word is only used twice by the Apostle Paul, and the word itself was invented by the Apostle Paul. It did not exist in the Greek language before Paul used it, and it's only used scarcely after. It would be ridiculous to say that Paul invented this word to condemn homosexuality, because in Greek, there were over a dozen other words that referred to homosexual sex and relationships that Paul could have used that his audience would have easily understood. Instead, he needed to create a word for something that the language didn't have a word to describe. And the best understanding of arsenokoitai is a reference to exploitative and idolatrous same-sex sex that was common in the Greco-Roman world. It doesn't mean homosexual.
All right, so your response to what he had to say there.
First of all, putting the words of the Greek language aside, in Romans chapter 1, Paul talks about men having sex with men, burning with lust for each other, and women doing the same thing.
Is that also in Corinthians, if I remember
right? They're referring to a word that he used in Corinthians you just played. But I wanted to back up and just say, whatever you want to parse about the words, if you read some detail in Paul's comments in Romans 1, he's clearly condemning the practice of homosexuality. Now, it doesn't mean he's condemning homosexuals as people or saying that God doesn't love them. He goes on and gives an exhaustive list of sins in Romans. He talks about that one a lot, but by the time he's done, there's gossip and disobedience to parents and all kinds of things. It condemns everybody. The message of the gospel is forgiveness, but of course, if somebody's going to claim they didn't do anything that needs forgiveness, then that's another matter. Now, Paul did not invent that word.
He did state later on in the video that it was used very scarcely.
Okay, let me tell you how scarcely it was used. In Leviticus 18, it says a man will not lie with another man, and you could be put to death for doing that. Now, I've done another whole show where I mentioned that some of these capital offenses could be taken care of with a monetary penalty, so audience, don't worry about the being put to death part, but that does show you how God felt about it. Now, the Old Testament was written in Hebrew, but the first translation of the Hebrew Bible into another language was the Greek Septuagint. And that word is found there for Leviticus 18 that Paul's then using over here in Corinthians.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I know there are a lot of sincere skeptics, and I've had many pleasant dialogues with skeptics, but sometimes there's a real arrogance. And this is somebody who obviously has an agenda. Instead of just saying, look, I don't believe in the Bible. I disagree with what the Bible says about homosexuality. And I want to be free to whether this guy's gay himself or wants to just say that it's okay, whatever his own lifestyle is. Be honest. But when you try to make the Bible say something it's not really saying, or try to act like it's not saying something it clearly is saying, that's very disingenuous. And you could just hear the arrogance in his voice. Nowhere does it say this. Nowhere. Whenever I hear strong words like nowhere, absolutely, it has been established as a fact, I know I'm not going to hear any facts.
Right. And on top of that, we talked about this before, where skeptics will take a lot of things out of context, a lot of Bible verses, and therefore, oh, that's it. That's what you have to believe in. But there's a lot of context behind these words.
And they will not give the Bible the same right of context that they'll give other ancient documents. They're very selective in doing that.
Right, right. So this leads me to another point. This is about the same area where, again, it has to do with context, but this guy apparently doesn't want to view that. He just wants to view it on these Bible verses alone. I want to keep the audience in mind that he is using the term grape instead of the word rape. So we're going to be talking about a very serious subject.
So we're not talking about the Welch's grape juice company, everybody, because he would have gotten in trouble with YouTube for using the word rape. So he says grape instead.
Exactly. He wanted to still, I can't believe I can say it, but he wanted to monetize his videos. So he uses the word grape instead of rape. But let's take a listen to this next clip, which has to do with a Bible verse.
Specification for grape? Where's that in the Bible? Well, Mark Johnson, I'm glad you asked. And since so many Christians refuse to read their own Bible, let me do it for you. Ready? The book of the law, Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 28 through 29 says, if a man happens to meet a virgin who is not pledged to be married and he rapes her and they are discovered, he shall pay her father 50 shekels of silver. He must marry the young woman, for he has violated her. He can never divorce her as long as he lives. Wow, that's just wonderful. So if a man grapes a virgin, then he gets to keep her forever.
All right, so your response to his verse.
Okay, first of all, hello, McFly, anybody home? He just started out by saying that this is going to be a passage where the Bible condones rape. The whole purpose of the passage is that the Bible is not condoning rape. The guy that raped the woman is punished. Now, he doesn't care for the nature of the punishment. He doesn't like that. He thinks the punishment should be something different. But let's at least start out by acknowledging that his whole original premise, that he's about to read a passage that promotes rape, and I guess I don't have to say grape, rape.
Yeah, exactly.
That premise is not here. Now, why did they do it that way? This was a very different patriarchal society. These were very different times. If a woman had been raped and was no longer a virgin, most men would not marry her. In those days, if you could not get married and you were a woman, your only other resource practically was prostitution. This was a way of protecting the women. Now, would he be the best husband in the world? No, but financially, she needed to be protected. So what they're saying is this guy now has an obligation to protect her. It was the protection of the women that they had in mind. I'm sure this fellow, some 4,000 years removed from this time in his arrogance, thinks he could have handled it better, but that was a completely different culture, completely different times. They didn't have the kinds of laws and rights that we have in our society. That was the way women were protected. That was the way they were dealt with.
Right. So the apologist, I wanted to mention his side of the thing very quickly for this one. He's talking about, again, a mistranslation over the time. The original was Hebrew, and it's been translated to English as rape, but it should have been more as seduction instead of the word rape.
I have read that too. Okay. Yeah, it's very possible that this was not rape the way we would think of rape. I have read that. I concur with that. That is very possible. But the point is, he had sex relations with a woman and it was outside of marriage, and that would have, in a sense, soiled her to society. So God is saying you have to do something about
that. Right. And he also brings up 2 Samuel, where the son of David, Amnon, am I pronouncing that right? Apparently he raped his
notice in that one, her brother went and killed the guy immediately. So there was a very severe penalty for rape in that particular case.
Exactly.
So yes, it might have been a word that's not necessarily translated rape, but whatever it was, there was a penalty inflicted on this person, and the protection of that woman and her life hereafter is what was paramount.
Right. Okay, so we got through some of the serious topics. We're going to go, I wouldn't say lighthearted-ish, but it's going to be a lot more light when we come back after the break here.
Okay, so, sounds good.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you.
is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Check out these terrific customer reviews for Bob Siegel's science fiction novel, Push the Winds Around. Another winner from Mr. Siegel. I've always loved the time travel stories, and this one takes a creative approach. Like H.G. Wells' classic, it delves into morals and metaphysics. And as any good time travel mystery, it leaves you satisfied while raising questions at the same time. Here's another review. Quick, thought-provoking, enjoyable read. And just one more. My kind of book. Adventure, fun, excitement, suspense, time travel, love, and a day at the beach. What's not to like? A great book to lose yourself in. Happy reading. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Those of you who like to hear just the Christianity part, I do want to remind you that the Bob Siegel is also on Saturdays on a different station, our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial or KPRZ.com. Sunday night, we could talk about anything, politics, religion, green Chinese pottery, anything. Tonight, we are talking about the Bible. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
Yes. For those who are wondering, it starts at 11 a.m.
11 a.m. Right. Yes. to 11:30.
Exactly.
So those of you that want just the Bible and none of the politics, that would be the show for you.
I found this super quick clip of Joe Biden. He was having an interview with a local radio station in Washington, D.C.
And he actually, This is recent.
And he had made the comment that he was the first black
woman. I heard that. He meant that he served with
the first black. I know, but I want to play it still.
Good old Joe. Go ahead.
By the way, I'm proud to be, as I said, the first vice president, first black woman. Mm-hmm. Served with a black president. Mm-hmm. Proud of the first black woman in the Supreme Court. There's just so much that we can do because...
I mean, it's just sad
Joe, just go home. You're missing all your favorite TV shows. Just go home, Joe.
I agree. All right. So let's get back into all these different topics that we have. As a reminder for those who are just tuning in, I have been watching a lot of Christian apologist videos, and there was a certain Christian apologist reacting to a bunch of these little small clips. I'm just having Bob react to some of the clips that he had to watch. This one is going to Stephen Colbert and Neil deGrasse Tyson. They were interviewing each other, and they had the topic of faith versus evidence. So here is this clip, and let's hear your response.
So how did you resolve the urges of a believer to reject evidence in favor of faith?
What are you talking about? The urges of a believer? The urges of a believer to reject evidence? Who says that's spoken by somebody who's not a believer? Because there's no urge to reject evidence. I don't think that my faith is related to evidence. There are different things.
Okay.
My faith approaches a mystery. My faith comes from a place of a need to be grateful.
All right. So what's your response?
I don't agree with either one of them, either the guy that was defending faith or the guy talking against it.
Okay.
The Bible does not define faith the way we define it today. Today, right. When people say faith and they relate it to Christianity, they think Christians are saying, I have no idea whether God exists. I have no idea whether there's a Jesus, but I know I'll just live my life as though there is a God. And when I die, if it turns out that by chance I happened to be right and there is a Jesus and a heaven, God will reward reward me for having been so gullible and stupid. The word faith in the New Testament Greek meant obedience, trust. We are putting a trust in God. The assumption was that God would make himself known through the Holy Spirit, through a personal relationship with God, and also the resurrection of Christ was talked about by the apostles as a fact of history. One of the early Christian apologists, Justin Martyr, writing to the Emperor Antoninus Pius, says, if you don't believe these things, check the accounts in the Acts of Pilate, which can be found in the imperial archives. Nobody's going to say that to a Roman emperor if he isn't absolutely confident that they are there. So let me give an illustration. If I ask a friend to take a $1,000 check, say, I can't make it to the bank. Can you go to my bank and deposit this for me? It may take faith to believe he's going to head to my bank instead of his bank. But I'm not going to wonder whether my friend exists. I'm not going to wonder whether we really had a conversation. My kids growing up, they learned to trust their parents. We have rules. You will be punished if you disobey the rules. If you run out in the street and you don't look both ways, we will punish you. They may not have liked the rules, but those were the rules. They learned to trust their parents. They weren't imagining that mommy and daddy exist. I do not have the kind of faith in Jesus Christ that says, I choose to believe him because it's beautiful to believe in him. I know for a fact that God exists because I know God. I have a personal relationship with him, and the opportunity to have that relationship is corroborated by ancient history, by archaeology, by fulfilled prophecy. There's all kinds of evidence. There are all kinds of actual facts that we can experience for ourselves.
That last part, by the way, is a word for word of what the apologist in the YouTube video said.
Well, good for him.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just wanted to point out Romans chapter 10.
Well, maybe
10.
He was watching one of my videos.
He possibly was.
Just kidding.
I just wanted to point out Romans chapter 10, verse 10, saying, for the heart of man beneath unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. Meaning, you just can't speak the word, oh, Jesus is my Lord, and that's it. No, you have to truly believe it within you.
And you have to turn from your sin. And now, exactly. We recognize that we're not able to do that without the help of the Holy Spirit, and we need God's forgiveness, and it's an undeserved gift, an undeserved relationship. But we are choosing to be in a relationship with God in which God is telling us what to do, and we are obeying him. So it is not blind faith. So they were both wrong. And I must say, that's very typical for Christians to defend their faith that way. And they're not really doing a good service to their faith when they do that.
So do you believe in the four types of faith that there usually are in Christianity? I don't know if you are familiar with
I'm not
types.
Familiar with anybody breaking it down into okay. four types. Why don't you tell me what
very the, quickly what we the, have dead faith, which is referred to in James chapter 2 verse 17. James informs us that faith without works is
oh
dead.
yeah that's just another way of saying what we just said. If we're not willing to repent, we do, because the word faith literally meant obedience. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the other one was demonic faith, which we have talked about before.
Yes, that even you've asked about that. That yes, even demons, because the word for believe in Greek, one word could mean many different things depending on the context. So
right.
Believe could mean intellectual belief like we say, but it could also mean to believe in something to the point where you're putting your trust in it.
The next one they suggest is vain faith. This is referring
putting your
to
faith in something that's not really true.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then lastly, saving faith there. And that has to do with
putting your faith in the resurrection and atonement.
Of course, John 3:16 yes. is a perfect
right.
prime.
So I haven't heard them categorized as four, but those four that you mentioned, yes,
right.
those are all
I decided
very
to
accurate definitions.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I decided to be very minuscule with them, but okay. yes, you're correct. Okay, so moving on. This one, I bet you get thousands and thousands of times as a Christian apologist, this little clip here. It's only 12 seconds, so it's a pretty small
okay.
clip, but I bet you get this one 1,000 times.
If I tell my wife, if you don't love me, I'm going to set you on fire, am I a loving, good husband?
If you set her on fire, then you never loved her to begin with.
And if God sends us to hell, he never loved us to begin with.
That one, I bet you get 1,000 times.
Yes, 1,000 times. And here's the thing. Whenever somebody says to me, I don't believe in a loving God that would send people to hell, I always say, do you believe in a loving God that would send people to heaven? And then they say, well, yeah, of course. And then I say, well, who's going to be in heaven? And usually their first knee-jerk reaction is, well, everybody. And then go, oh, everybody? So like this guy from the clip you first played, I'd say, so will rapists be in heaven?
Right.
Will racists be in heaven? Will murders? Will Hitler be in heaven? And then they'll go, well, no. no, not all those people. Okay, well, then where do they go? You see, if God is going to be loving, he also has to be just. If a judge let a murderer or rapist run free, we would view him as an irresponsible and therefore unloving judge. Now, whether hell is a place where you burn is debatable. That was an image that was used in the Bible because the word for hell, Gehenna, originally referred to a garbage dump in Israel where trash was burned. And it may simply have been Jesus' way of saying, if you're not going to follow God and you're not going to do what you're created for, then you're going to end up on the trash heap. There was another time where Jesus referred to hell as an outer darkness, which is almost the opposite picture of a flaming fire. So whether or not you burn there, that's an open question if that's what people are worried about. But it is a real place. It is a place where people will be separated from God for all of eternity. And if God did not have such a place, he would not be a loving God.
Right. So are you telling me that Looney Tunes has been wrong the entire time with the flames and the Red Hot Devil
My
guy?
Favorite Looney Tune, because I love Sylvester and Tweety Pie. Sylvester is trying to catch Tweety and he goes to hell. And hell is a bunch of bulldogs. They're like half bulldogs. And this big bulldog says, oh, let's open up the book. Woo! We've been a bad pussycat. It is just hilarious.
Another one I like was whenever Yosemite Sam, he had an episode where he went to hell a couple times.
I don't remember that one. But he'd be like, okay,
well, here, I'll send you back and you got another chance. And he keeps going back to hell. Let me get another chance. And then he gets
whoa.
And then the last part was, I think it was like the fourth time or fifth time he went down. He goes, let me guess, another chance. He's like, nah, forget it. I quit. I'm done. I'm just going to stay here for So one last thing I was going to mention too about that clip super quick. Let me go back to the whole image of hell specifically. So do you remember Hercules, the Disney movie specifically from like 90s?
Yes.
Would you say the dark, like...
I don't remember enough details, though, but what's your question?
So basically, there was no flames in the underworld in that movie. It was very dark, it was very depressing, and there were souls instead of actual demons. The demons in the movie were pain and suffering, I think were their names.
Well, demons are not in charge of hell. That's they are suffering themselves in hell, demons.
Right. What I was mentioning was, is that depiction of the underworld more like Christians' view of hell in that sense?
I would have to look at it again, but a place where people are living in terror and they're isolated without necessarily burning is very close to the
Okay, that's kind of interesting. Yeah. So I don't know if Greek mythology
it's interesting
like
because Hades was one of the Greek gods and he was in charge of the underworld. But then that word Hades got into the vernacular. Now, in the New Testament, Hades is compared to jail. And Gehenna, that word for the garbage dump, both translate as hell. That would be referring to the ultimate hell. So it's like our court system. You get arrested, you go to jail.
Yes.
You await your trial. If you're pronounced guilty you go to prison, possibly for life, which would best fit the analogy of the Christian.
Yeah.
So Hades is like a holding cell for souls that are not going to be going to heaven, but they have not had their trial yet. They haven't gone before the judgment seat of Christ yet.
Gotcha. Okay. So this next clip has to do with things that we sometimes can't explain. We just usually say, oh, God is this miracle. That's what this guy is basically saying in this clip. But I'll let him further explain it better and see what your response is.
If you're someone who thinks that a valid argument for God is gesturing vaguely at everything in the universe and saying, so you just think this all came from nothing? Please watch this video. The first issue with this argument is that it is a God of the gaps argument. It is a gap in human knowledge. We do not know for sure what kicked off the whole entire universe. However, historically speaking, putting God into a gap where humans lacked knowledge has been proven to not be very good for your God. Because as human knowledge expands, the gaps where you've been putting your God are getting smaller and smaller.
All right, so your response to the gap theory. For those of you wondering, I'm putting air quotes when I say gap theory.
Well, it's kind of a straw man's argument because as Christians, we accept the fact that sometimes in science, there are things that don't have explanations. And in time, we have explanations. What this guy doesn't seem to understand is that that's a better definition of miracles anyway. When the Bible talks about God doing miracles, they don't claim that he's waving a magic wand.
Right. He's not a wizard.
They're not claiming that it's anti-science. They're saying the very same God who established pushed all scientific law has some laws that we are not yet aware of. There are many things that we understand now that years ago would have looked miraculous. Imagine somebody even 100 years ago, let alone 1,000 years ago, watching you get out your iPhone with these dancing images on it and sounds coming about. That would have looked like a miracle.
Right.
We understand we've harnessed some science that they did not yet have. So human beings probably know less than 1% of all the obtainable knowledge in the universe. How does God do his miracles? With the 99.9% of the knowledge that we don't yet have. Now, they can call that God of the gaps, but they are randomness and chance of the gaps. You say, well, how did we evolve by randomness and chance? Oh, well, nature did it. It's just, they don't have any other argument. It makes sense to say that the complex universe comes from a complex God. But that doesn't mean that we won't someday understand these things. And when we get to heaven, every miracle in the Bible may be given a scientific explanation.
Eventually.
That doesn't mean it wasn't a miracle. A miracle right. just means it's something that we as human beings cannot yet do not yet understand, but God does, and he can do it.
Exactly. And it's such a wonderful thing when people actually realize it for one. Like, I get the Big Bang Theory. That's a scientific theory, mind you. But something about having all these miracles around us and having nature. The only thing I think God will have a hard time explaining is why he gave us AI technology at the same time.
The interesting thing about AI technology is we're sitting here saying, okay, will a computer or a robot ever achieve sentience and be able to think? Well, that's an open question. But if that ever happens, it will be because human beings programmed it.
Right.
That way.
Right.
Which begs the question, well, who then programmed us?
Yes.
Exactly. Something had to always exist. You cannot get something out of nothing, and that something had to be a personality. Otherwise, you cannot explain human personality. We are finite. We are born, we die. You cannot explain finite human personality unless there was an eternal personality behind it.
Absolutely. All right, so my last clips, I don't know if I should play them together because they both, I think, have a similar kind of topic. One involves asking if God is a narcissist because there can only be one God. And then there's another one, a clip following that, that has to deal with there's over 1,000 gods. And why is this such
an
issue?
So
I'm
going to
play back to back.
Okay.
Why do Christians always assume that their God is the only God that could exist? Or that they'll be safe if they believe in him and he doesn't exist? I mean, when your life ends, it could be Anubis who meets you for all we know. And he could very much feed your heart to Amit for having a false sense of superiority simply for your religious beliefs and using dumb takes like this to justify it. Then you could be wandering restlessly in Duat for all of eternity while all the people you took to hell experience paradise in Nauru because they weren't self-righteous with dumb takes. And like I said, no one deserves eternal torture simply for not believing in or obeying a particular god. And any god who thinks so is a cruel narcissist who is not deserving of worship.
Over the last 10,000 years of history, there's been about 10,000 different religions and roughly about 1,000 different gods. What is the probability that Yahweh is the one true God and Amun-Ra, Aphrodite, Apollo, and the other 986 gods are all false gods? You guys are atheists just like me of all the gods I just rattled off. Some of us just go one god further.
All right, so your response is you could take your time for each one if you want.
There's nothing wrong with the idea of multiple gods as a concept. It's just that that's not the way things happen to be.
Yes.
If we happened to live in a universe that had many gods, that would have been fine. As it happens, we live in a universe with one God. Does that make this one God a narcissist? No, he just is the one God. It's the truth. He is the one God that exists. When he proclaims that he's the one God that exists, he's proclaiming the truth of the situation. He's not claiming that, well, yeah, there were a lot of other gods, but I got rid of them so I could be the only one. And what are the odds that this God is the correct God? Well, because the Bible, unlike a lot of these other religions, Greek mythology, and some of the others they're quoting, Aphrodite, Zeus, the Bible is corroborated by other ancient history and by archaeology, by fulfilled prophecy. It offers a relationship with God, some of the things we mentioned already.
Right. And again, there's Christian professors too. Otherwise, this is a complete waste of time. And I don't believe it's a waste of time. I believe this is truly, in my heart, the right thing of me to follow. Other religions, I pray that they'll find light one day at some point. But at the same time, I'm not going to be able to convince a person like that on the snap. And I know as a Christian apologist, whenever you go to universities or you go to other campuses, you know you're not going to convert somebody just like that, especially an absolute atheist.
Well, and they, if people aren't willing to deal with their sin, they're not interested in converting. That's one thing. And the other thing is they should think about it. I get a little nervous when people convert to Christianity too quickly because chances are they're going to fall away later. I tell them, as Jesus told them, count the cost, think about it, study, pray, pursue.
Yes, absolutely. Just because it may sound, you need to really, truly look at what you're trying to do.
Exactly. And so, for everything in life. Yes. Certainly for something as important as God.
Don't choose a person just because, oh, they can be my first black president. Oh, sorry.
I didn't mean to read because that. He uses gel in his hair to make it closer to California.
Well, we are done with all the Christian apologist questions, but we still have a few more minutes.
All right.
We could quickly talk about the upcoming election still against
we can bring
politics again. 2028 is still coming up, and I know maybe it is a little too early to talk about that kind of race again. Would you believe that Kamala and Gavin would run then, probably in 2028, or are you of the objection of like, no, they're probably going to sit this one out?
If even the then. Democrats have half a brain,
it would probably
very big them. If, they probably wouldn't be wild about either one of those candidates. Kamala Harris polls lower than Biden, and she can't use the excuse of having dementia. He's in denial that he has, but she does not have dementia, but she is not the sharpest tool in the shed. She's a hypocrite. She's changed her positions on policies back and forth. She's trying to legalize things that she once prosecuted when she was a prosecutor. Gavin is governor of the state that people are leaving in mass exodus, assuming that his recall election was legal. And you of all people, Brendan, have reason to doubt that since you went down to the polls and they tried to tell you you already voted. But even if that were true, that could easily be explained by the fact that most of the people that don't like him don't live here and vote anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking they're going to probably try to come up with better candidates than that. However, whatever candidate they have, no matter how smooth talking, even if they do a better job debating, they're all going to have the same policies. And those policies are tyrannical.
Yeah.
So even if they put somebody that is more likable on the ticket, like I keep saying, maybe a Michelle Obama, she would be much more likable, but the policies would end up being identical to Biden's.
Identical. Let me throw out a few other names then in that case. Gretchen Whitmer. And if you remember her, there was a...
She was one of the worst governors during the COVID lockdown. She was telling you what items in the store you could buy. Same store, but you can buy this item, just not that item.
And then
she tried to use COVID as her excuse.
And during that time too, there was like a suspicious plan to kidnap her, apparently.
I believe that was from some right-wing nuts. And we do have nuts on the right wing too. We've got to be honest.
So I got some other names too. I'm just thinking I'll talk about Wes Moore, the Maryland governor. He could possibly jump in there. And keep in mind, I don't like anything.
As a general rule, a governor has some of the qualifications of a president by experience, but we've had some horrible governors. You just look at the blue states and the red states and look at how they're doing in terms of crime and in terms of the economy. California, New York, the blue states are just a nightmare.
Yeah. Another one I was thinking of that's not a governor, though. I'm thinking like Pete Buttigieg probably would want to enter. I'm going to guess. I would hate to see that personally. I mean,
he received his appointment on the cabinet because he was gay and married to a man.
I think so.
And I'm not saying that a person that's gay and married to a man couldn't serve on the cabinet. I'm just saying that when that's the only reason he was hired and they didn't look at his qualifications because he didn't do a very good job as mayor.
Yeah.
They used to call him Pothole Pete because he couldn't fix the roads.
Or my president can ride a bicycle. Whole malarkey. Do you remember Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania?
The name is familiar. I have not followed him
much.
He was
one of the first ones to be like, oh, Trump's lying about the election in 2020. Like, he was one of the very first politicians to
unfortunately, that's become pretty standard. That's not the truth, but it's become a standard lie on their part.
Yeah. A last one I could think of, Pritzker from Illinois, the governor of Pritzker. I know the Democrats would love him, too. Oh, a billionaire just like Trump. Oh, a very big progressive. Oh, he attacked Trump during his legal woes and all that stuff.
Anyone that ever attacked Trump will be a darling to the Democrats. That's true.
But those are just some names that come to mind. If you have some other names,
I think by the time 2028 comes around, it'll be people that we're not even thinking of right now.
But
certainly it could be some of those that you mentioned.
I'll invite your listeners to email you at questions@bobsiegel.net and just flood your emails.
Oh, there we go.
Well, Bob, thank you for this wonderful
Brendan, It was a blast. It was fun chatting about the Bible and throwing the politics in and out.
Yeah,
we'll see you next time.
Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.